Hello, and welcome to another exciting adventure of DCE Pirate Radio. I'm going to start doing these intros without the guests in the room, but those of you who are watching along on YouTube can see I'm sitting all on my lonesome in this room. For those of you that are listening, just picture me all on my lonesome in a room. Don't picture too hard, though, because that's going to make me uncomfortable. So let's go. Let's be a little bit more professional. Let's give a shout out. I'm going to say to my sponsor, but it's us. It's our product. I want you to buy my product. We don't make any money off of talking nonsense to our friends, which some would say we shouldn't. But we do have to sell our magical elixir to keep DCE going and keep everything. So I probably should give a bit of a shout out to myself. So let's have a bit of a read. What do we say on the website? Jamu Tonic. It's from Bali. Been used for a long time. Great for inflammation, digestion, infection, immunity, energy, metabolism. I'm not even sure what fucking energy means, but hey, it's on my website, so it means good. But the main thing I find is Jamu Tonic. It's really good for those little niggly injuries. Doesn't matter if you're doing jiu-jitsu or some kind of combat sport, whether you're a heavy lifter, whether you're a runner, those little niggly injuries, especially around your joints, that's what I use it for. That's what works for me. I've had people say it helps with indigestion, with acne, with all kinds of different things that I cannot confirm nor deny. But there are lots of people that think it does an awful lot of things. Me personally, I find it helps with the, not DOMS, it's not necessarily the muscle soreness, it's more of the little niggly wear and tear injuries, especially I'm on the other side of 30, so those little niggles around the elbow and the lower back, it helps. Basically, if you've ever seen anything that CBD oil does, it does the same thing, but you don't get to be cool injecting marijuanas. The other thing is, make sure you check out my good friend Tiny Sumo for the Tiny Sumo Talk Time podcast. He has little quick half hour to 45 minute conversations with people in the MMA and combat sports realm. He's a little bit more mature than us, or certainly is on the lines more mature than us. So if you like a bit more of a mature podcast where people talk about things of importance opposed to me and James talking nonsense with people, I suggest you give his podcast a listen also. Okay, that's enough of the sponsorship. Let's introduce our guests. So today we have Liam Reznikov. Really stressed myself out trying to say it that second time. I'm not even going to attempt a third, but I'm pretty sure I got it when I needed to. So we've got Liam on. He's one of the co-head coaches. Him and his brother Dylan run VT1 Martial Arts Sydney, might be the official name. I always just know it as VT1, but our affiliate gym, or where we train when we go to Sydney, fantastic facility, super nice people. If you're in Sydney, I highly recommend that you go down and check it out. Whether you're a serious martial artist, or whether you just want to get a bit of a workout, great gym, check it out. Super, super friendly, super nice people. Don't listen to Yelp. I don't know what they're on about Yelp. Definitely wrong. We'll get into that on the very end of the podcast. We also have Ash Sinclair, who was going to say my first martial arts coach, but it wasn't. I was training somewhere for about 6 months before I moved over to Millennia MMA back in the day. But Ash is obviously started up Element Jiu-Jitsu, of which I run an affiliate of now. And always great to have a chat, long and storied background. That's probably all you need to know, because we're going to talk about it in the podcast. All right. Listen, enjoy, share, buy Jamu, give me money. I love it. Bye.
I'll kiss you on the lips and take you to Italy.
That is a classic.
Shut your mouth when you're talking to me.
Anyway, no time for nonsense. Gotta get down to business.
We're gonna get straight to the point. We've got no time for nonsense.
No time for messing around. Straight to the point.
No time for fluffing about. You're straight to it. Just straight to the point.
Just gotta get on with it.
Better not be honey getting me, bro.
Don't you look at me in that tone of voice. Auf Wiedersehen! Now, ladies and gentlemen, allow me to introduce to you, from the depths of our twisted imaginations, the DCE Pirate Radio Podcast.
That doesn't make any sense.
The Pirate Radio Podcast, my friend.
You're such an idiot.
But probably.
Then yeah, we'll go quiet. Well, we know it's recording. Yeah. We are now recording.
We are now recording.
And audio?
Yeah, we're
oh shit. That's fucking Inception. I thought it was my idea. You thought it was your idea, and now it's happened.
It's all good. I feel like we're in a mediation with two tradies who didn't do our deck properly.
They're tinnies.
Now what?
Now we're in New Zealand. You didn't do my deck properly. Like, deck properly. Fuck! I fucked up the joke.
Why do you ruin things?
I heard the best joke today.
It's cold without it.
What was it? Happy Father's Day, motherfuckers. It took me a few minutes to be like, Happy Father's Day, motherfucker. Yes, there you go.
It's good joke. It's brilliant.
It's a terrible joke.
It's just,
I get it.
It's levels. It's got levels.
I haven't heard it before.
Yeah. No. Just today.
No.
Yeah, you don't actually hear those type of jokes until you are a dad.
Yeah. So. Or someone's granddad.
I also paid no attention to it when you said it earlier.
Yeah, I was like, because did like, you get it? Or you
I'm just, sure I told you this once already.
Oh, I got it. I just
did fun jokes. I liked it.
So we'll do an intro and we'll introduce everyone.
So normally we argue over this, but luckily for me, for the last two podcasts, it's all been Matt's guests, so he has to introduce them.
I'll do it in post. We've got Liam, we've got Ash. We're going to talk about some stuff.
Which one's
it's
Liam?
Not going to be very structured, and we're going to have some fun.
Hail. I'm Liam.
You're Liam, and Ash.
Nice to meet you.
I'm Ash. I'm Ashlim.
Ashlim.
Ash. Well, that was my first question. I was going to ask you about the magic Jew numbers.
The what?
The Kabbalah stuff you were talking about.
Whoa. We just rewind everything. Are you actually Jewish?
I guess I'd say I'm Jewish. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Oh, no, because I wasn't sure. I don't know you. There's a lot of Jew jokes. I'm like something about Dizzy and he's got a big forehead.
I'm like a non-practicing Jew, I guess.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, kind of.
So, yeah, I legitimately was interested.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That you were telling me about the Lucky 13 and the...
Yeah, because today's Friday the 13th. Everyone's all freaking out about it.
I know.
I'm born on Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
It's actually a lucky number.
Happy birthday.
Oh, no, I went to do the same thing, and at least I stopped before I said it.
Yeah. I said it ironically.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's a lucky number. It's just, I guess, different numbers mean different things in different cultures.
Yeah.
Like 4 in China.
Yeah.
4 is very unlucky, yeah.
And 8's great, right?
Yeah. So I thought 6 was bad.
No, 4's bad. So 4's pronounced, which is the same pronunciation for death.
Six?
Before we go on, do you know why he knows that? I didn't know this till recently. He was, can I say it publicly?
Sure.
He was trained by our government to question generals on the battlefield if we were going to fight China.
It was a slight embellishment.
It was something that...
There were no generals involved.
No, but you were trained to question people who know stuff.
It was two separate things. Yeah, I was a trained linguist, which was Mandarin, but I was also a trained investigator and tactical questioner.
Right. So he could call up like a hotel and like book a hotel, ask for no feathers in Chinese, and nobody would like know he wasn't Chinese.
I hate feathers.
Yeah. Well, so could you put on the dialect and the accent?
But I'm Liam. So.
Yeah, he owes books for us.
So does that mean that you can say it like, fluently with an Australian accent?
Or
do you speak Mandarin?
No, so Chinese accent, yeah. So, I mean, the thing with Mandarin, like a lot of other languages, I'm probably speaking out of turn because I don't know any other languages, but my understanding of how a lot of languages work, especially European ones, like you can't really speak Mandarin with an accent. You have to speak it with the right inflection anyway.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just because it's tonal.
So they can't tell if you're from a certain province.
Inflection changes the meaning of the syllable. Saying so, you kind of got to roll the accent in with it to a certain extent.
Yeah,
so Cantonese, the word for yes and the C word are very similar.
Yeah, you can say whatever you want, whatever you're comfortable saying on camera, you can use whatever language you like.
He's used up his
language. I can't use the C word out in public, so you don't want to mess that up.
Yeah,
yeah, so he was like an army interrogator for like Mandarin
government, people.
Yeah, government. Shady stuff.
That's all I can speak of.
Before China was cool.
Yeah.
Again, before China was cool again.
It was pretty cool.
It's cool now. Oh, it was cool with the Shaolin, but now it's
the Shaolin.
Kind of went through that stage. It was just electronics and
yeah,
that sort of stuff. Kung Fu movies.
Dance Dance Revolution.
Yes. Correct.
I've seen Tokyo Drift.
Gundam style. That sort of thing.
I think we've covered every Asian country there in that conversation.
Four white guys sitting around spreading lies.
Just speaking Mandarin.
Tattooed white guys.
International relations.
Asian people with their white skin. head of the KKK chapter out in wherever we are now.
Don't tell people.
So what's going on? Okay, so you were asking about Kabbalah. Kabbalah's like...
What's Kabbalah?
Kabbalah's like a mystic number system. It's like the mysticism in Judaism. So it's like basically Madonna and Hollywood kind of bastardized it. So they've got like their Hollywood Kabbalah, but supposedly you're not meant to do it before, I think you're 50 or 60, because you'll go crazy with the information in it. So, you know, like Nostradamus, you know, predicted all this stuff. So they've got those sort of things where like each letter, I don't think he was, but it's
I think Jewish is the correct terminology, even though I said Jew before.
Yeah. So basically like Jewish is
not, am I being offensive?
No, it's a fair question. So you can say, are you Jewish? Are you a Jew? That's fine.
Oh, you can say that.
Yeah, you can say that. Don't be Jew is not a great thing. Or anything that describes like someone's action with Jew.
Because that's putting a negative connotation to it. Yes. It's like saying, don't be gay, don't be a girl when someone's doing something like with a negative inflection.
It could be objective. You could like, I could be cutting my Sabbath toast and you're like, you're being a Jew.
You're being a Jew. Yeah. You're not
Wouldn't be considered negative. But yeah, so Kabbalah is one of those like mystic things.
But if you were cutting me a piece of cape and you cut me a really small piece of cape and I said, don't be a Jew, then I'd be that would be negative.
You could hide behind the subjectivity. Like small piece.
What if he was cutting your foreskin off?
Yes. Sometimes when less is more. Yeah. So basically like the old guys did Kabbalah, which is like a number system to answer questions. Like, you know, they believe they predicted Hitler. Like, so each letter is a word.
Did they figure that out after the fact though?
That's how I feel about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's how I feel about it. But, I still, like, you know, like American Indians, they've got all their stories about like spirits and stuff.
Yeah.
You still grow up a little scared of it. Like, not talk too badly about it, but kind of like puff up a little bit.
I don't think ghosts are around, but at night time, sometimes I walk real quick when I'm going from the toilet to my bed.
Well,
not from ghosts.
With his flashlight.
You don't need
flashlight.
Yeah. So that's what Kabbalah is. Kabbalah is just like a mysticism, I guess. It probably would be similar to some of the pagan sort of things.
But they have. Yeah. The language has letters built into it.
Yeah, there's letters and numbers. So in Kabbalah, I don't know that much about it because you can't learn it till you're older anyway.
Yep.
The letters, each letter is a representative of a number. So like if you have like the Bible, right?
Yeah.
You can read it down that way and those represent numbers and dates and names and numbers. I never really got into it because to be honest, it just seemed not interesting at all to me.
Yeah.
It seemed like more math and Jews do enough of that in Asia. Yeah. So, yeah.
I can't work out whether I'm being racist or being supportive of your
self-hating.
What's going on here? I don't understand.
But, anyway, so that's what Kabbalah is. And then, like, the Hollywood dudes just started their own little Kabbalah yoga school, whatever they did.
So is Madonna Jewish?
No.
Okay.
She does yoga.
You said Madonna. I'm like,
no, yeah, no, she's famous for doing Kabbalah.
Okay.
Who knows what that means?
But she's not Jewish.
It's like Ashton Kutcher being a black belt in jiu-jitsu. He probably does it here and there. My daddy's put in the time.
Yeah.
So like,
has he got his black belt?
Between the harem he has at each of his 12 houses. Like, probably doesn't train that hard.
Well, I heard it.
You never know though. Like, if you were that rich, it's very possible. It's like, fuck, what am I going to do?
It's hard. Does he have his black belt now?
I don't think he's black yet, but I know he could just throw you money to beat someone up for him.
Yeah.
So he probably wouldn't put the time in.
Like, I heard he just does privates as well, so it's going to be hard.
That's what all those celebrities do.
Yeah.
There's that program, the Machado celebrity program.
Yeah, the one. Oh, it's a good idea. I'm going to.
It's a great idea.
Also, we're starting a DCU program.
All those high-end Adelaide celebrities.
Come see us. We can teach you
how to. Here, right?
Yeah.
Hey.
Exactly.
Pink belt.
Pink belt. Yeah, it already exists. Yes, it's a suit.
Female.
Yeah? Really?
Yeah. What's the pink belt program? Self-defense program,
Horan will knock at your door. That was the thing when I was training jiu-jitsu with the Gracies. Like, don't make Horan and knock on your door. So remember, Horan sued his own family because he copyrighted the Gracie name.
Yeah.
And then he sued the other guys who tried to use it. I think he won. He won like 130,000, I think.
Yeah.
And he got countersued and I was like, man, this is not for me.
Sounds like a headache if you win or you lose.
But they have this boogeyman joke a bit like, hey, don't make Horan's lawyer call you.
Oh, so don't make his lawyer, not like don't let him knock on your door.
Well, I don't think Horan's going to knock on your door.
Or did it turn?
He's living in a harem too.
Yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't want to leave.
He's busy teaching Ashton Kutcher.
Pretty much. Yeah, they do a lot of celebrity guys. Yeah. Oh, good. Just drove that conversation.
Yeah. Right in the ground.
Straight in there.
This is why we have
the board.
I would like to know. Everybody else stop talking.
Ha 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 ha.
Where you've come from. Okay, have a bite. Have a bite. Go on. Oh, go on.
You have to give that bite a review. Go,
that burger place is great.
Yeah, give, I don't, where's it?
Where I forgot the name.
It says on or something.
I got a 3-hour seminar coming up, having a can of Coke and a giant. That was a big burger too, right?
Mm.
Yeah.
Was it good? Well, how was the price like? I can't remember. Is it reasonable?
$15.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm going to rely on my manic energy to get through the seminar.
First half, anyway.
Yeah, the first half.
Yeah. So back to my everyone. Yes. I've only heard about you through like third parties. I would like to know. Matt will give you an intro before, obviously, the podcast, so people have got a rough idea. But like,
which you
but
won't hear until after it's released.
For my own,
I got hide it.
For my own purpose. Who are you and why are you in Matt's house?
I am here to teach a jiu-jitsu seminar for Mr. Coach Ash Sinclair. Known each other for 10 years.
Probably. I'm Liam.
Oh, yeah. Liam. And you came up trained and gave me a bottle of explosive diarrhea. And,
yeah. I'm pretty sure that was probably something else.
Yeah, yeah,
it was a bad batch.
Well, you forgot to tell me not to drink the whole bottle.
Yeah, I've done that. I've done that to a few people. Yeah. So it is on there in big writing, to be fair to me.
And you did just eat a whole burger in a can. Nobody
so you know what?
Maybe it's not to do shit.
But yeah, so I don't know. Yeah, we're on here to talk.
How did you get it? How did you get to the point where you're now teaching jiu-jitsu? Like, are you from Adelaide? Did you grow up in?
Oh, yeah, good question. No, so I'm from Sydney, and I'm from South Africa originally, and my parents were both karate teachers, so grew up doing karate and stuff, and then. In about 1994, I found a magazine with the UFC in it. And I was like, oh, fucking, I'm sold. This is it. No more dancing around in pajamas, breaking boards and shit. I'm ready for
that's the it.
Real deal. I'm ready for the real stuff.
I'm ready for some chest to chest. So, yeah, man, as soon as I got to year 12, I was like, jiu-jitsu, that's pretty much it. It's been 20 years now. This is 20 years. Yeah. So, yeah, so Ash used to come down for the UFC, and then we knew each other through something else.
Straight Blast Gym.
Straight Blast Gym.
Yeah, and Crazy Monkey, yeah.
Yep, and then, came trained a bit, and we came down here. And yeah, it's just been coming down every year for the past couple of years. Yeah.
I've got a question I've always wanted to know.
Basically, I travel the world, spend all my money on jiu-jitsu, and then I come back and I share it. That's pretty much what I do. I would probably have a house at this stage if I hadn't. So that's my thing, I guess.
That's my, your passion.
Might be obsession at this stage.
Hey, passion is the healthy word. Yeah.
Passion is the healthy word. Yes, before I had a kid, travel's less now.
Do what you love and never work a day in your life.
That is the dumbest thing ever, by the way.
Confucius.
That is how you burn out. I was speaking to my friend who's a psychologist yesterday, and he's like, that is how you burn out.
Yeah.
By not putting boundaries in place, going to bed thinking about your... not work for 20 years straight and then burning out. He's like, man, everyone's like, oh, you're a psychologist. That's not even working. You're helping people. Of course, 3 years in, he wants to kill himself and you can't really have a psychologist who wants to kill himself. So
apparently that's not a good thing.
No. It's not a good thing.
I really, really want to kill myself. Yeah, me too, man. It's this is.
You guys,
let's do it together.
Drink the purple cordial, man.
What do you guys do for work outside of this?
cannot name.
No, he can.
Oh, you can. Yeah.
I don't work.
Oh, right. To do this the Jammu and stuff. But no. I think, like, man, that's have you ever met someone who's like who keeps saying that like whole like, you know, if you do something you love, you'll never work a day in your eyes, and their eyes are like drooping. Kill me.
Yeah. Well, I've never spoken to anyone that's actually doing anything not boring. Like, I always hear the people that say those type of sayings to me are people that actually hate their job.
Yeah.
And they're like, they're sort of like, the glass is greener on the other side. And they're like, oh, yeah, I could be doing something else. I'll just do something else. Like, no one's stopping you.
I mean, I love my job. I genuinely love my job. And I actually enjoy, like, when I'm not working, I think about what the content of my work is, like jiu-jitsu. And finding stuff. But one of the big things that happened was a couple of years ago, I realized, like, I got to the stage where I was like, I'm acting like an amateur. Like, I'm thinking about this all the time.
Yeah.
I need to actually, like, creativity isn't good when it's boundless.
Yeah.
So I actually had to go, like, I put your phone down when you get home from work, leave it in the car.
Mm.
You're not allowed to watch jiu-jitsu at night. Not, like, you, like, just put it in this space.
Yeah.
And as a result, I avoided burnout, which was good, obviously. Yeah. But when I kept in that space, I actually was more creative. I thought you just have to think about it all day. And
yeah.
Jiu-jitsu lifestyle,
too, my way too hard.
Memes.
Well, not so much jiu-jitsu, but to anything in general. Anything. Like, I think I find if I think about anything too much, I can't keep doing it.
And that's the thing is like, so that saying is like, it's like the new meme of our generation is like, you can do anything, do something you love, you'll never know. Some people should just work.
Yeah.
But if you do something you love, put in some boundaries around it in a square so that you can actually thrive in that little box rather than like just seeping everywhere and not, you know, so I think like that's what my friend was saying as a psychologist. Yeah. He was like, even a psychologist, he has to like, he does like 20 hours a week.
Yep.
Which doesn't seem like that much.
Yeah.
He's like, anything more than that and your boundaries start to go out.
That's
of, like,
21-hour sessions with people who are like telling you about all their problems. Yes.
That's hard work.
Yeah.
Yeah, so and then you go outside.
I have enough trouble dealing with one person that tells me about their problems all weekend, and I don't fucking get paid for it.
Well, the thing is, wait till you have a kid and a wife and a this and a that, and never, and it's like, man, you leave psychology to be a psychologist outside.
Yeah.
So you got to, like, limit that. So that saying.
I love stripper tattoos sayings, though.
Yeah, I like stripper
tattoos. We had an entire like, argument via stripper tattoo sayings via text message the other day.
There should be one stripper tattoo, and it's like, it should be backwards, and every time you go to the mirror, it says, don't try ice, not even once. Like, doesn't matter what your friend says, don't try ice.
Not even just to see what it's like. Yeah. Don't do it.
Doesn't matter what your idiot friend says. It's
gonna I like that you pointed at Liam when you said don't.
Good.
Well, I like that you called me Liam. Someone got it right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Very intelligent.
Sorry.
Well, I've got my question for you.
Go for it.
I've always wanted to know, and I can never figure it out. How the hell did your brother end up doing like being Muay Thai or Muay Thai?
Being
Muay Thai, man.
He
is the representative of Muay Thai for me. But you did jiu-jitsu. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Well, we were both. So I was actually really into Muay Thai and jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
That's actually how I met the SBG guys. I went to meet them in Thailand. And I was just training full time, loving it. I was about 19. Dylan was about 17. And then he came to jiu-jitsu, got his blue belt, won a couple of tournaments and stuff, but he just didn't gel that well with it.
Yeah.
And then he decided he was going to join the Israeli army for an adventure.
Makes sense.
Fuck it.
Well.
Because a magic number told him
because
to.
Because one of his, no, yes. Because one of his friend's mothers, an Israeli lady, convinced him how romantic it is and this and it's that and you go here and it's beautiful and your life. And meanwhile, she'd moved to Australia so her fucking kids so she sends my brother over there while keeping her kids, you know, under her armpit. Anyway, so he's booked to go to Israel to join the army without telling my parents.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, you're going to kill dad.
Yeah.
And I convinced him to tell my dad.
Yeah.
Eventually, my dad was in the army too, so he's like, you know, don't do it, you get scarred, nah, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, I mean, he had no connection to Israel, it just seemed like an adventure.
Yeah. I get it.
I get the after school thing, but maybe the Australian army, you know, like, Israel, not go to the border, you know, like, maybe not the time.
If you're going to do something,
can you name me a time when going to a fucking Middle Eastern army is a good idea?
Well,
I think in the last 1,000 years.
Yes. My brother's not one of those start small kind of people.
Yeah.
He likes to go straight into it. He started riding bikes at about 16. He was a professional by 18.
Yeah.
And he quit by 19.
Yeah.
He kept flipping it.
Yeah.
But one of his mates died on the track and he's like, maybe I should do kickboxing.
Yeah. Less damage.
Less damage. And then join the army.
Yeah.
But it's funny because so the army thing, he told my dad talked him out of it. My parents still didn't trust him.
Yeah.
So they took his passport.
So, well, no, they sent me with him to Thailand to get him into, like, martial arts a bit more.
Because
he was doing it, but he wasn't really into it.
Yeah.
And I took him to Thailand, and, of course, being him, he fought within 3 months of being, like, his first trip. Like, we were in Koh Phi Phi on the sand floor, and, like, some taxi driver was wrapping his hands, punching a pole.
Yeah.
You know, like, we're getting changed in a tin shed.
Yeah.
And Dylan's like, this seems like
nothing. This seems normal.
Than riding a motorbike.
Well, this would have been 15 years ago so.
This was 2000, maybe.
So people that have been to Thailand for the rock star treatment with a photo included in your package is probably not what you're thinking.
This was during the bird flu sort of season, and like this was kind of that stage where people in my community, like North Shore kids, weren't going to Thailand.
Yeah,
at that stage. So like it was pretty unusual to go to Thailand at that stage. But unless you were like a 7-year-old Vietnam vet.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, for a different reason.
Yeah. A new wife in a new life.
Yeah.
Hey, they're all happy still.
Left my heart.
But she, yeah, so I took him to Thailand and he discovered a new addiction. That's what he loves. So he's got his new addiction at least has lasted like 15 years. So he ended up fighting, I think, 30-something times, won a world title, bunch of stuff. So he ended up being better at Muay Thai than me. So
yeah,
so that's done. So he's tattooed Muay Thai. He did end up in the tsunami and all that sort of stuff. And
I know, connected.
Roundhouse kick.
He caused it.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Well, actually,
kicked a tree so hard there was a massive wave.
How he ended up there was actually pretty messed up. So we were in Copenhagen, and I borrowed his car to get some money out. And I went to the ATM and I put the code in wrong 4 times because that's what I do. That's what I do. And Commonwealth, they basically ate the card, and Commonwealth's like, you have to wait an extra 4 days. And he was meant to go to Koh Phi Phi the next day and I was going home.
Oh, no.
And the next day I get on the plane to go home. And as I arrive in Malaysia, people like call me like, how's Dylan? What do you mean? And it's like Koh Phi Phi just got flooded. And he was waiting for the credit card in Copenhagen. Otherwise, he would have been in Koh Phi Phi. But two of his buddies were there, and they were fine. But anyway, he ended up being search and rescue for a while, and that was pretty gross.
So, yeah, I've heard some of those stories. Yeah,
scarred by that.
Well, I feel like I know more about your brother than you from the Joe Rogan podcast.
Well, he was gonna do a podcast called Young, Dumb, and Full of Samsung, but he never ended up doing it. It just wasn't, I think, to be honest with you, it was one of those things like, I mean, Ash, I wanted to ask Ash some stuff, but like a lot of the army dudes, you know, they talk about how what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, but it seems to actually make everybody a lot like mentally less strong. Like a lot more damaged. So like scared and anxious and, none of that intense stuff seems to have a good effect later on.
Yeah.
There's a few memes like that. It's like, what doesn't kill you gives you crippling anxiety.
Ash was telling me, you were saying, I was like, man, you said you're scared of flying a little bit, right?
And yeah,
I was like,
I hate flying.
Yeah, and I was like, but didn't you? And he's like, dude, we used to go,
just like military tactical flying is not a comfortable thing to be in, you know, like just by its nature. Yeah, you know, like just wrap it out
what
two
were
jobs.
Meals like?
Yeah, the flight attendants were really ugly as well. But yeah, it's just, I don't know if that's what caused it, but certainly before I went into defense, I was fine with flying. And now, yeah, I'm not crippled by it, but.
Not a fan.
It can't finish quick
enough. But you think you just get used to it.
Don't enjoy it. Yeah.
You just get all that stuff. You just get used to it. You're over it. And whether, the opposite happens.
Whether or not it makes you feel any better. I used to enjoy, as I've gotten older, I am liking flying less and less. Yeah, I always used to be like, easy, don't care. Now we get on.
Turbulence?
Turbulence, I'm okay with. Takeoff, I'm okay. Like, there's just weird, it's obviously my own anxieties. The takeoff, I'm like, yes, we're going fast, but I like driving car, like,
driving
in the back streets. I've
raced track cars and stuff. So like, I had a track
car, officer. Yeah. Driving, like moving fast is fun. But there is this weird like getting in and getting shut. It's like getting shut. I think that's what it is, claustrophobia.
It's right? Control,
Joe Rogan's talking about how he sits in his car. Have you heard this? He's talking about how he sits in his car, has a bunch of like a space cake.
Yeah.
And then quickly checks through the airport security and everything and then sits down and hits him as the doors close.
Oh.
And then he's off like, I could not think of anything worse.
And he'd just be like, anything worse.
But stuck. He seems, again, from someone that I've never spoken to, he seems to like the anxiety almost. Like, that's almost his favorite part of it from listening to it. It's like, it seems to like the reflection of, I suppose, looking into your own soul.
That's a lot, though, dude.
Yeah, I don't want to know.
That's a wired kind of dude.
Yeah.
That's a lot. Like, I mean, like, we're talking about, like, Ash in the helicopters, you think you'd get used to it and flying would be easy.
Yeah.
And how it kind of, like, it gets worse.
That's the opposite,
Imagine doing space cake on a plane.
Oh.
Just stuck.
Yeah.
I can't see how that works.
Well, and imagine if you think you can handle it. And then you're in the air. Oh, no, no, you can't, idiot.
It did become a news story.
Yeah, yeah, well, one of those on the plane to Bali for
ate her own face.
Yeah.
No, no. Sounds like a good answer.
Yeah, if it's breaking news.
It was you, wasn't it? When you went to Bali, yeah. And then the plane got turned around like half an hour from landing. And they got
acid on.
Well, no, this lady went spastic apparently. And she was like, yeah, she went. And then when they got back to Adelaide, the federal police were like waiting at the door of the airplane for her. Like,
She'd obviously taken something, but I think it was more like Vicodin. Like she took something prescription, I think. But yeah, it was when the volcanoes happened. So we were going over there for my sister's wedding. There was like, you know, 20 or 30 of us on the plane. And yeah, there's this one lady that, you know, cause the captain's coming on and it's already anxious as it is. And then you start to circle and then, you know, the captain's coming on to say, we've got a problem. And like, that was it. Like, it didn't matter what he was saying. Like, that was it. That obviously set her off. And she was not hanging. Right. So then she's trying to fight the flight attendant. Like, but
so physically restrain her.
Yeah. Well, I think, and
so pin her to a seat with gaffer tape.
I think in the end, what they did, cause she was only young. She was there with her, she would have been like 20, but she was with her mom. So yeah, like I understand. I've never made it to that stage, but I understand how you could be that upset.
Okay, I've been in the waiting room.
For a
couple of times.
Well, I was there then. Like, you know, I don't like planes either. And the captain's saying there's a problem. Like, I'm sitting there stressed. And it was funny how.
Looking around, I'm like, where are the parachutes?
It's funny how much her energy affected the rest of the plane as well.
For sure, man. 100%.
Imagine
in the army that must happen. Like, it's like, you guys got to, like, watch out for if one dude starts. You know what I mean? Like
wigging out.
Yeah, I don't think I remember too many occurrences of it. There was certainly an instance in Timor where there was a food drop and a riot broke out, as they tend to do, and someone who I shall not name,
Kevin Smith.
Yeah, let's call him. No, he's one of my favorite directors. Let's not call. Let's call him Kevin Jones.
Okay, you mean
Kevin Jones has
John Jones.
He just absolutely legged it, this dude.
Oh,
he was a corporal. I was an digger at the time. This guy just absolutely legged it. It was interesting.
Was you tell me about the bayonets in the bottom of your floor or something?
No, that was you.
No. So shotguns. I can't remember shotguns your story. In Bougainville.
I love that name.
Yeah.
I feel like we're in Bougainville right now.
That's not nothing to say about it. Right?
That's another 10Ks out.
We're not that far away, but we're...
Yeah, I'm allowed to say it because I'm from there. It's okay.
Oh, do you guys like the M-word? Do people in LA use the term Bogan or do
they
refer to Adelaide as Bogan?
Well, I didn't know that people
referred to Adelaide as Bogan.
The whole thing's Bogan.
This is news to us.
Get out.
Something I want to point out, actually, because I came down with Ash with my wife, I think it was the first, was it?
Not first time. I think
came down with Ash. It was your wife, or you came down with Ash?
We're very close. We're very close.
I had no idea what to expect about Adelaide. I didn't know.
It wasn't the first trip, I don't think.
But the first trip I had made to Adelaide was with you, though, I think. It's great. Australia's like best kept secret.
You can keep your inflated house. Well, you guys are not really shitty weather.
Dude, this place is great. The food's like relaxed. It's small. It's cultured. It's got Comic-Con. Jiu-Jitsu. Yeah. Food. Jamu. You guys.
Jamu.
No, but seriously, like Adelaide's like a really great place. It's underrated. I know it's got its bad areas, like every area. But like
everywhere.
Yeah, but overall, like quite a livable place.
I never understood, like, because the people in school, a lot of people move to Melbourne from Adelaide. Yeah. Not too many people go to Sydney.
Right.
But I never understood it. I'm like, what, unless you're going there for study or like for a reason.
Yeah.
I never understood the point. Like, I don't know. Yeah, just like, why would you go somewhere else? Because the thought is Adelaide's too small, so I'm going to Melbourne.
Well, Adelaide's great, man. The small thing's good as you get older. You can, like, you guys, I've seen some of Julian's pictures of your guys, like, natural beauty in the wildlife parks. It's unbelievable.
Very close to the city.
Yeah.
The music scene really is good. Your guys' food scene's way ahead of Sydney's scene. That taco place we went to, man, that place is out of control. It was like San Francisco level, sort of like food trucks and
Zambrero.
Yeah.
No.
Really?
Well, this was 5 years ago.
It was cutting edge back then.
Yeah.
They're like a chain now.
It was pretty cool back then, though.
Yeah.
So I was like sitting in Adelaide going, man, this place is great. I was expecting like toothless Bogans and Ash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least I'm not one of the teenagers.
That's what I got. But they were charming toothless burgers.
And you got a burger.
And I got a burger.
Nice burger.
It was a good burger.
Delivered to your door.
But yeah, Adelaide's underrated. You guys are still under like that cloak of invisibility a little bit.
Yeah, we're going to keep that way so that things don't get worse.
Yeah. Some truth.
Yeah, we'll fuck it up soon.
I'm sure.
Yeah, like all things.
This podcast is in the process.
Yeah.
Helping.
It does what? I still laugh sometimes. Like, everyone's so hell bent with like how Melbourne, especially for us, obviously it's the closest city as well.
How far is it?
8 hours drive.
700 or 800 k's. Yeah, it's not far. It's the closest.
Big smoke. That's it
for when people like for eastern suburbs kids that are leaving home and going to be a fucking recording artist.
You guys have
like,
eastern suburbs, sure?
Yeah.
Oh, is that like the rich area?
Yeah.
Yeah. Surprising.
Yeah.
Maybe it must be like something to do with compasses. I don't know.
No, but why the east here? I'm just thinking because it's for us.
It's near the hills.
Yeah, it's on the foothills, overlooking the city. Yeah, looking at the beaches, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
It's interesting.
We had to have a scattering of rich people in other areas as well.
It is weird that it is the east.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder, does anyone know anything about
one,
London?
One in four chance.
Is East London?
Yes.
East London's a bad area.
South London is bad.
You were born in England. If anyone's going to know, it's you.
Yeah, okay. Tell me something about the fucking North.
Let's just make it up. Yeah. The sound authority.
I wasn't born in the
North. Oh, yeah. East London is a very expensive area.
Okay.
Actually, the East End. Yeah, it actually is. I'm pretty sure that's where all the entertainment.
You guys talk about driving 8 hours to, like, Melbourne not being that far. If you're in Europe, you just went through four countries.
Yeah,
no, I mean, from the eastern, the eastern suburbs kids, when they're, like, they're finishing school and leaving home.
In Melbourne.
But, yeah, we're moving to Melbourne so we can, like, hang out.
It's like a 45-minute flight.
Yeah. I realise the irony of
Dude, Melbourne's the place you visit for 3 days and then leave before you get depressed.
Yeah. It's cold and it's full of miserable people.
Yeah, it's so miserable. But it is actually fun. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, for a very short period of time.
Yeah, 3 days, 4 days. Yeah. I've been there for a week. Mm. I felt the darkness creep.
But as far as I'm concerned, Sydney's the same. Apparently,
Sydney's different.
We're isolating the listeners in every state now.
Hey, everyone.
Three podcasts ago was
Sydney's a nice visit for 2 days, unless you know people. Look, you can do more because of the beach and stuff.
Yeah.
But, like, if you want to actually see Sydney, besides, like, the beach, you have to know people. Like, it's like anything, you know? Yeah. Like, Melbourne's probably like that, too. Like, I was lucky I had friends in Melbourne that took me to, like, dirty, fun places.
Mm. Yeah.
But, like, you know, like, bars with, like, a Thai family living in the bar that cook, like, awesome Thai food while the band plays. Like, you don't see that unless you know somebody.
Yeah.
But Sydney's definitely like that. Because Sydney would be like, it's like, it looks like Singapore. You have to know somebody to do something. Yeah.
Luckily, I know someone in Singapore.
Yeah, you know.
But I know what you mean.
You know, the Prime Minister.
Singapore, I do.
Yeah. I know someone in Sydney now.
Yeah. Well, I did notice that in Sydney.
Sydney's cool, but it's big. It's very hard to get around without a car there.
I found it was, the best way to describe it was a bit dumb. Like, I think it's just because there's so many people. There was just people, like, there's people in my way. And, like, the biggest thing for me is, like, getting in a lift or an elevator.
Massive.
People who walk out before someone walks in. I just found there was this shitload of people. And maybe it's because I was in a hotel.
I was in
CBD. But yeah,
that's very easily inconvenient.
Your CBD is a bit different to us. So, like, no one actually lives in our CBD.
Yeah.
You travel from outside into the CBD.
So, okay, yeah.
You leave at the end of
the day. So it's probably all the other tourists that will get in my way.
Yeah, there's a couple of, there's apartments, but not generally most people live outside the CBD. So the people
is that because no one can afford to live in the CBD?
No, it's just not set up. It's not set up. Like, you guys have got, like, open spaces and, places to live in the CBD. We just don't. It's literally, like, this little area with nowhere to park and old buildings.
Hmm.
Yeah, so you can't really, you can get an apartment in the CBD, but there's not, like, houses and stuff like that.
You need to you need to turn your mic. Or you just turn it towards you. That's fine.
How much longer are CBDs going to exist, you reckon?
That's a good question.
Like, what's the point almost now?
Sydney's adding a second one randomly. Some politician, this lady and this guy just basically said, bought property in Parramatta while it was cheap. And they're like, Parramatta's a new CBD, guys. Put an airport near there. Well, look at our property.
Yeah.
It's like, and I'm like, they just added another CBD.
Yeah, just make another one.
Let's make another one.
Fuck it. Let's do it.
But I always thought so many businesses moving into the city. So why? Like, no one.
That's a good question.
There's no parking. It's expensive. Mm. Like, why wouldn't, if I was opening a big business, I wouldn't put it in the city. Well, why would
New York still work? Because, I mean, New York's like the quintessential
big
city. Oh, they're stuck on an island, aren't they?
It's very residential as well, though, isn't it? Yeah. Adelaide's gone in the opposite direction. Like, the Adelaide CBD's riddled with empty.
Yeah.
Commercial properties everywhere.
Oh, and empty apartments. But that's because they're, yeah, there's a lot of, well, we've spoken maybe about this before, like a lot of lenders now won't, like there's a lot of restrictions on the money you can borrow to buy property within the CBD now, because a heap of investors basically went, Melbourne and Sydney have like, look at the house prices there. So we're just going to knock everything down and build these massive apartment buildings. And then it's got to the point where the supply won't meet the demand anymore. Well,
Adelaide is a strange analog. So I've been here now quite a lot, and it's like, man, it is an interesting mix of immigrants. Even the immigrant scene is different. So, like, you guys have, like, in the area I was in, they've got, you know, the shisha bars, and they've got, like, the Afghani restaurants.
Yeah.
Like, it's really cool, but it's a different kind of immigrant to what we have.
Yeah.
It's a different, like, countries seem to settle in different. Yeah, like South Africans, when my parents came, would go to Sydney, St. Ives. That's pretty much it.
Yep.
Or they would go to Perth.
Yeah.
That was it. Those are the two places they'd go to, right? Canada, they'd go to like Thornhill or whatever it is, and another area. Like, so you guys seem to have different ethnicities to what we have settling in. And the restaurants are different and the. Yeah.
So we had a lot of like European influence. Well, from where I grew up, it was a lot of, like Italian, Greek, English, like whether we've all just picked states, I don't know, but
remember when it wasn't cool to be Italian? Like, you know, like now it's really cool to be Italian.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm dying to go to Italy. I love Italian food.
Well, they were the original ones that no one wanted.
Remember like when I was kids or a little before, like an Italian person was just someone who had like lots of hair. We never used racist words for them, but They have the local grocery store.
Yeah. The fact that you feel comfortable saying it is proves his point. Yeah.
But the point is like I've got this guy at my gym, Adam, and he's Italian, like big Italian family, you know, a couple brothers, and he's very Italian. And he's like, I kind of missed the boat. Like it's, if I go up to a girl now and say I'm Italian, it's like the language of romance and you can cook and blah blah. Back then it was you're a wog.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like he grew up where it wasn't cool to be Italian. And he's like, dude, I missed the boat. It's not fair.
Well, luckily or unfortunately for me, I grew, like when we came here, English.
Oh, yeah, English, yeah.
We came here when I was 10.
I missed it.
And I was like the only English person in my school.
Oh, now it's cool to be English.
Well, no, it's not cool, but we had a heap of Italians and they just picked on me for being English.
Well, now you'd be James Bond or like.
Pretty much.
Someone English who's charming. There's someone out there. Yeah. Daniel Craig or something.
Something
being English was like Fawlty Towers.
Usher. Usher English?
Wait, Usher is English.
Craig David. What?
No, it's Craig David.
Oh, I'm thinking of Seal.
Kiss from a Rose.
Kiss from a Rose is one song.
Fun fact, I thought that was by Guns N' Roses until I was way too old.
Fun fact,
wait, what? How did that happen?
Oh, I'm watching Coach Eddie's Train Seal.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought Eddie was a big dude until I saw that photo of him standing next to Seal, and Seal made Eddie look small.
Is Seal big?
You've met Eddie.
Yeah, I know. I didn't realise Seal was big.
He made Eddie look normal size.
Really?
Yeah. He's a big guy.
Yeah, no.
How do you think he hits those notes?
Speaking of trained celebrities, Dylan's coach was bloody Nick Stone was coaching Idris Elba.
Yeah.
Like just randomly for that movie, in the newspaper. And I was like, Dylan, how come you didn't fucking tell you? I would have been down there stealing his undies.
Yeah.
I like, just showed up at train today. You don't train here. Do today. Like, Idris Elba. Kind of ruined it though, because see, he was doing kickboxing and I was watching the videos and I saw him fight and like, when you see him in the action movies, he's this bad. He's a big guy too. He's a bad motherfucker. Watch him fight kickboxing. He's all right. Like he's an average amateur. He can fight, but like
it's not the same.
You've got guys. Remember, JoJo would have killed
him.
Joe would have killed the new James Bond. How weird is that?
Well, that's what I was watching the new Rock movie the other day, and he put a rear naked choke on.
Which one was it?
Rampage.
Oh, I quite like that.
Oh, well, because it takes me out of things now. So he put a rear naked choke on, and I assume since he was a WWE champion, he knew how to do a rear naked choke. Yeah. But So he was doing it for the cameras.
Yeah, only if you're jumping off of a table onto something else.
But I'm like, okay,
there's a title belt on the line, or you don't do the real stuff.
Off the rope. I accepted it. And then he choked him out, and they were out for, he walked off. He just left him there, not tied up.
Yeah. They always do that.
Though. I'm like, what's going on? It took me out of it.
It's the same with tasers.
Yeah.
In the movies, they're always like, someone gets hit with a taser, what happens? They go unconscious. Yeah. That doesn't happen.
Yeah. It just hurts, doesn't it?
That's not what it does.
It's like, Austin Powers, where he's like, take them off to like kill them in the shark cage. And Scotty's like, why are you leaving them there unattended? I have a gun in my room. We can shoot them now. He's like, no, I want them to leave them behind this closed door with one guard in an easily escapable situation.
Oh, man. It's the thing is, what's weird about it is it extends out of the movies, too. Like, I mean, I know army guys. I know proper guard guys. I know all these sort of guys get to work with over time doing martial arts. And like, so there's a lot of guys out there that have killed people with guns that still believe and teach nonsense martial arts.
Yeah.
Which is weird. Mm. Like, they've seen real violence, and yet they'll still teach, like, break the neck.
Yeah.
Well, there's money, but the thing is, you can still make money and teach real stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's not as much. Yeah, but I feel like I can answer that.
Good.
There's no. It's hard. It's hard to actually train to do it the proper way. It's much easier to say, hey, idiots, come over here, give me $50, and I'll teach you. I'll teach you how to fucking, like, quick fix. Everybody wants a quick fix.
Nah,
man.
That's why you're humble.
Yeah. White belt.
I don't know.
White belt's good. White belt's like the never mind.
Yeah. That's what they want. Everyone wants a quick fix. It's like, oh, no, you're going to have to spend a heap of time and effort.
Okay, so I'm with you on that. I get that, right? But, I mean, you can still teach real stuff without the work. Like, as in what I mean is you can still teach them to throw a jab across and a rear naked choke properly.
It's not sexy.
Yeah, but how flashy is that, mate?
I get what you're saying, but you could put it between it and go to sleep at night a little bit.
Maybe.
Yeah.
When I gave a pair of wraps to Carly for boxing, and her boxing coach, who's a professional kickboxer, said, oh, don't use wraps. They're bad.
I hurt your wrist.
So that's your wrist. Use these little gloves that we use to put inside the boxing
gloves. Yeah, she had her wrists.
I don't know. What the fuck happened? She still doesn't. She's still
dead now. She married the kickboxer. She's not a
pussy. And I killed
her. He doesn't rap.
But two of us. But yeah, again, it's like...
No, you're spot on, I think. But So you're spot on, but I don't think they know it's bullshit. That's the only thing I'm
arguing. Yeah.
So they're like, they definitely have some... So like,
tell yourself a lie for long enough, it becomes the truth.
They're not liars,
they just shelter themselves. They shelter themselves from the truth.
Yeah.
They don't allow themselves to be in a situation
where they get caught out. If you tell yourself something for long enough.
I don't know. Do you think they know? Because, I mean, you've had more exposure to arm guards. Do you think they know that it's bullshit? Or they just.
Look, I don't think the vast majority of soldiers would know. I mean, you know, like, for the most part, the army's changing a little bit. This came up
now
on the on Tuesday. Well, you've got, like, Paul Kale doing the kinetic fighting. Army's taking that on as a actual thing.
It's more realistic.
So more stuff. Yeah, and the other thing is it's getting rolled out. So more soldiers are actually training in it. But in my day, like, basically no one did it. There was a course that you could go off and do called Army Unarmed Combat.
Mm.
It was like a 2-week course, but not everyone got to do that.
You know, like chop them on the bicep.
It was mostly judo. Mostly judo.
That's good.
Yeah. But most soldiers wouldn't know. So, and that's why they all go out to civvy schools and train at night after work,
Do, so. It's not so bad now, but I used to get like a lot of like paramedic soldier guys that they're just untrainable.
Yeah.
They didn't want to know. They didn't want to know about like, you could tap them out, take them down, punch them in the face, and they could not see that that's a good thing to learn. I just had an idea.
Why do I need to know
that? I don't know if that. I don't know if that's a soldier thing. I think that's just a personality type that the army probably attracts more of. That's true. I mean, we've had our fair share over the years.
We've had some good.
Fair would have seen some guys come through the gym over the years with that same mentality. But
how practical, like. From an army perspective.
Can I just add before we go on? I've had some very good soldiers. just saying.
For all those, you
just tend to remember the bad ones.
How much would knowing unarmed combat be valuable? in it? Like, if you don't have your gun, or if you're in that situation, have you already fucked up six steps before, or is it worth knowing?
Well, it comes down to the scenario. So I guess the thing is, it's typically not something that's going to come up in open combat that much, you know, like if we're talking about in the field.
Arguing with the janitor.
They're going to fight over coffee, man. They might use it more. But like in an urban environment, when you're doing things like room clearance.
Yeah.
So, you know, that first guy through the door, there's a bad guy by the door. Like those instances have happened a lot.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, I know like Paul Cowell, the guy that I mentioned, he's teaching the army program now. He was in the commandos. He had to kill a dude with a strangle.
Yeah.
Well, five people held him down. I'm sorry, Paul Cowell.
I do endorse that. And there was a guy in the US, there was a famous case, a dude beat a guy to death with his helmet because he's come through a door, guy's grabbed his rifle, so the rifle's useless now.
Yeah.
So he's gone to his secondary, so he's drawn his handgun, also engaged against the wall, and the handgun's had a failure.
Yeah.
Wow. And the dude's knocked it out of his hand, so he's just taking his Kevlar off and beating this guy to death
with it. Have you seen his weapon shit? It's pretty fun.
No?
Like, I thought it was going
to
be like...
I've got all this shit.
Dude, he's got some good... Like, someone grabs your firearm, how you, like, use your other one to get him off it. It's, like, pretty cool.
Which opens the next thing, you know? Like, you get all these guys going, well, you know, I'm going to teach...
I've seen the...
I'm going to teach this martial art to soldiers or what have you.
Yeah.
If you've never worn uniform, like, frankly, you shouldn't be teaching soldiers, because if you haven't been trained on things like room clearances, weapon handling, small team tactics, if you don't know who's going to be over this guy's shoulder and what the scenario is, you can't actually teach that.
So
it doesn't look like punching and kicking at all.
Yeah. I always stay out of this debate with you because I like being friends with him.
Yeah.
But the only thing I've got to say, I disagree with, don't kill me yet.
Would you like a bigger wooden spoon for stirring that?
I don't have that army experience. I've got 2 weeks like running around holding a gun and cleaning it.
That's it, big wooden spoon.
Wait, how do you clean your gun again?
That was not the one that fired real bullets.
Did you know
that was the one that fired
blanks. No, but it fired quickly.
Did they not use a big gun or?
Dude, just to get off topic, my friend, for school we went 2 weeks to the army, and they, you know, you learn how to, you know, march and all that sort of stuff and safety things
with guns.
We ran a lot. A giant Russian guy made me watch his contact. We got this is in Israel. We got sent to like a bad, it's called Gadnawa. They send the bad kids and they take like groups and you do it. And this fucking Russian dude who'd been sent there, he was probably about 2 years older than me, but I was only like 16. He says, you'll watch my contacts while I shout. And I was like, okay. And then I'm watching his contacts and half an hour goes by. And I mean, this guy's a giant guy. He would have fucked the shit out of me, and I would have liked it. And I was sitting there with the contacts for 45 minutes, and he comes back, and then I was like, did I just fail? Like, if I'd run away, he would have been like, he's a real man. Like, he comes back, he's like, now he's my bitch, basically. Yeah,
power move.
We were not prepared for that. But anyway, the point was, my friend...
Wait a minute, rewind. Rewind.
Okay, so...
You were in a camp. You were 16.
Right.
So you've been sent somewhere.
Yes.
A Russian man asked you to
watch. No, he was a kid as well, but he was older than me.
A large Russian.
A very large Russian kid.
Asked you to watch his contact lenses.
Yes, while he showered.
In the room.
In the shower room.
Did you consider that he can't see, that if you just took his contacts, you would have won that fight?
He could smell me.
Smell the fear.
And he didn't need his contacts.
So were you in the shower with him?
No. I was in the waiting room for the shower area. Yeah.
I'm confused.
I was on my way out of having a shower, and he looks at me and the other guys, picks the easiest victim because I was the smallest, and goes, you sit down, you watch my contacts while I shower. Couldn't just bring him in there with him. Yeah. He was trying to find a fuckboy to play with later, and I failed the test.
Oh, right. See, because I
should have run.
For 45 minutes, I would have, fuck you. Today, him, at the pub, he's disappeared after lunch. I've walked out, I sat there, 5 minutes later, I'm like, fuck this, drove back here.
Then not a big Russian man is going to fuck you.
Okay.
In the middle of a desert. Yes. Where no one will hear my screams.
But,
my friend does 2 weeks of training and then you get to fire your damn gun.
Yeah.
Anyway, we get like one mag. We all put it. We're like, boom, savor the sound. Like,
yeah.
My friend, they go, don't put it on auto.
Yeah.
I just hear this.
Never on it. Yeah.
2 weeks of training for it. And it's fine. Didn't hear a thing. But anyway, so I was going to argue with you about one point, right?
Sure.
You probably do agree with me on it. I'm just treading lightly. You can still bring non-military people in to solve specific isolated problems that the military might have. That's all.
Yeah.
That's not.
No, he's just started shaking. For those
no, because I who am I to talk about military? I don't. You know, like yeah. I mean, he's an SAS guy. I was like 2 weeks again raped by Russian guys over
contact. I failed the contact test.
Yeah,
no, look, that's okay.
It is, but I still think, like, so, you know, I mean, we're now in a day and age where there are military guys who are black belts.
Yeah,
see, there are military guys who have competed at high levels and Muay Thai. Like, there is no reason to go outside anymore.
You've got Kennedy, all those guys. There's no reason.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, there would be jiu-jitsu black belts in the Australian army right now that we've never heard of. You know, there's just that many in the country now. So that kind of problem solving expertise should be out there. But the context is the thing. And that's where.
What made you say that? There was a situation where you started saying that because you saw something. I can't remember what it was, but you started saying that after you saw something online.
Oh, no, I can't remember.
Where are you going?
No.
You continue. I'll be back momentarily.
He's going to the powder room.
Yes.
Oh, is that this kind of interview?
He's starting to fly.
That happens when you have 2 beers.
But the thing is, you know, everyone talks about the army, how exciting it is and all this sort of stuff, right? After 2 weeks, I used to, as a kid, all I wanted to do was go into the army. I wanted to be in the army. I did 2 weeks of running around and being bossed around and seeing the attitude problems of the senior guys, and that was it for me.
Yeah, you saw it all. It's 95% boredom, 5% sheer panic. That's basically it. Yeah.
Good camaraderie, though.
Yeah, there is, but it's also, it's not like every guy you serve with is your best friend for life.
Right.
No. It's a different type. You certainly have those guys.
Those experiences.
You know, I caught up with a mate on Wednesday I hadn't seen in a few years. We'd served in Timor together, and it was like we had never kind of parted.
Oh, here we go.
But,
Zeke, out. You can't be trusted.
You certainly serve with guys that couldn't really give two shits about.
Right.
But you're in a scenario where you know that everyone's going to do their job, and there's like a trust there that you don't see the equivalent anywhere else, you know?
Right.
Just don't.
Well, you know, I want to ask you about, I actually asked to bring Ash on the podcast because I want to ask him some questions.
I'm just laughing because Matt gets so fucking pedantic. I love him to bits. He's my best friend, but he's the most pedantic fuck you've ever met about podcasts, the mics, things making a clicking. Earlier, my glass going on the table was prompted him to, like, hit me and say, put it on the thing. Now,
so let me
don't fucking worry about it. Don't worry about it.
The jig is up. He's found the hamburger. This is actually one of the topics I wanted to ask you about. It's got jalapenos and you're going to shit everywhere. He'll just edit this part, right?
No, we're not allowed to edit it. Because that's because then we've become too mainstream.
Trust me. Mainstream.
Honestly, if you're like,
what about all the racist stuff I just said?
Listen to podcast 4 to 10.
He just said white power like 6 times.
I've said, see what I did there?
What?
Self-moderated. I've said really racist things before that I won't repeat now.
Dude, I was in Virginia last year.
What did I miss?
Dude, I was in Virginia last year with my non-white wife, and it was just during those race riot things that were happening, you know, KKK stuff. And meanwhile, like, we were a bit scared to go. Not scared, but I was like, oh, this is not the time to go. My friend was getting married there.
Yeah.
We went there, nothing, for starters.
Yeah.
Like, 20 kilometers out of town, there's like 20 people with pickets and the police like clashing, like non-violent.
It's always a couple of idiots where they zoom
but
in.
It was like 30 kilometers out of town.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I thought it was funny to walk around under my breath with my wife going like, white power. We're driving a Mustang and we're like, white power. And I forgot to stop saying it.
Oh.
When other people were around.
That didn't know
you. Well, lucky she's not white, so that was at least my beard, my cover.
Yeah.
But, that white power, like, white power is quite addictive thing to say.
Yeah, that's how I caught on to
it. I'd be strung up for being Jewish.
Yeah, you wouldn't be winning.
My wife would be like, see, I told you, you're so.
Yeah, look what you've done.
And then she'd be next to me.
That was actually my Chinese name given to me by my Chinese teachers. White power.
Oh,
yeah, I.
Not my name. That was actually my Chinese name, Women Tibi.
Yeah, I fought them for like a year on that course to change my name. They're like, no, that's a very powerful name. Like, you'll be well respected. I'm like, you don't know what that means over here.
Yeah, you definitely, you know, when you see like an Asian person or like a Japanese person wearing like KKK stuff because they think it's like cool, straight, and you're like, doesn't really look like that.
Doesn't work.
But,
can't wear that stuff ironically.
Remember when you found out that Nok Su Khao doesn't mean white warrior? From kickboxing, yeah. That means white bread. white bread. Anyway, what else?
That movie was what got me into martial arts.
That's what got me into Thailand.
And it was just like
that.
Right?
That's all into martial arts. Van Damme just Van Damme. Did some mad
did
poker.
Swiss.
That's
yeah,
never did Muay Thai. Never did Muay Thai once. Barely did karate.
How many people did he try and fight? Like, he's had a fight coming up for so many years, hasn't he?
Isn't it just the same guy, though? I think it's just that one guy.
Is it? Yeah. It's just on and on?
It's just that one guy.
It's probably his dealer.
Did you ever see where he starts crying on TV and he's like, I wanted to show my, like, those little boys out there who have apostilled me on their wall that, hey, Van Damme, he's a good guy. Like, he's still, you know, I'm going to get in shape. I'm going to show them. Meanwhile, he's on, like, fucking a pile of Coke bigger than this fucking table. Yeah, he's lost it. Seems like a nice guy, though.
He seems like a nice guy, yeah.
Seems like a harmless guy.
Yeah.
Maybe not to his wife, because he's had about 40 mistresses, but
I'll forgive a mistress here and there. Like, if I thought you were going to say he's beat his wife, I'm like, it's hard to forgive that. But, like, mistress, I'm like, he's a movie star.
Yeah.
I'll give him a pass.
He just seems like a harmless cokehead.
Yeah.
Eddie says Van Damme gets the pass.
Yeah.
Van Damme always gets the pass. Yeah. Awkward. Anyway. Oh, so what I was going to ask Ash was, so this is one of the things I wanted to ask him about, because I've watched all the fighters when they retire sort of suffer PTSD, right? Like, no one talks about fighters suffering PTSD, but they do. I watched my brother after he retired, went weird for a couple of years. I watched Richie retire. He didn't go too weird, but he struggled for about a year after that. And obviously, army guys are the most publicized for having PTSD.
Hmm.
And I have a student who actually went through a really dark period. He was in the American army, and he was actually at taking his own life sort of stage, right? And the guys who talked him out of it were his army buddies from like 20 years before. But I thought about it and I was like, this is my very poor understanding of it, right?
Sure.
But I imagine like that it's got something to do with two things. One is, when you're with your buddies all the time, you're never really lonely, I guess. In the army, you don't have to think too much because you're with your buddies. Like, you don't have to seek meaning, or you're in the army, you've got your meaning. And when you come out and you work your crappy job and you do your thing and your buddies, you don't wake up next to your buddies having camaraderie all the time, and it's kind of lonely, I guess, in a way. And also, you've got that sort of like, I guess, given to you meaning that the army, being in the army gives you.
Yeah.
And then you're outside and you're like, what now? For what, the next 50 years, and then I'm in a wheelchair and I'm fucked. And I imagine fighters would go through a smaller version of that, right? Is that off base?
I think there's two separate conditions there. So, you know, certainly they're things that a lot of military guys go through. PTSD is very much reliant on there having been a trauma.
Right.
So, you know, there has been something that's happened.
Right.
And that's one set of mental symptoms.
Right, right.
But then there's also, like, there's a lot of recorded cases of almost like a separation-driven depression.
Yeah, I imagine.
So some guys might have one or the other, or some guys might have both, depending on what their experience has been. But, yeah, so there's definitely a lot more research and study going on into that separation-driven depression, that kind of loss of sense of belonging, of not being part of something that was bigger than you, not having that that kind of guaranteed confidence of walking into something where, like, you trust every single person that's around you, regardless of whether you're friends or not. Like, because that doesn't really exist anywhere else. There's not a lot of people that work in an industry where they go, I'm going to trust these 30 people around me literally with my life.
Yeah.
Even if I hate their guts.
Like, literally.
I know they're going to have my back.
Yeah.
Like, that's a really weird thing.
And I imagine you'd also wake up every morning just having a purpose.
Yeah.
You've got to get up and go do a mess or go.
To a certain extent, it's a purpose that's driven into you.
Yeah, of course.
Mm. course. It's someone else's purpose.
Yes. But it must
be at the
time. What do you tell it?
Yeah, it comes down to the individual, I suppose. You know, I mean, people serve for different reasons. Mm. Not everyone joins the army because they want to serve their country. Like, a lot of people see it as a guaranteed paycheck or sense of adventure, like deals or, you know, whatever. There's a whole heap of reasons why people get in. But then that reason combined with what the actual experience is, you know, experiences may differ kind of thing.
Yeah.
That little concoction of those things mixed together will probably be a really, really big factor into how that person copes later, I guess. Mm. Yeah.
Someone explained it to me also as a possible lack of, so after the army, there's a lack of pressure and, the word's not pressure. So when you're in the army, there's you're a little bit tight, you're a little bit wound up, you're always a little bit, and then when you go out of the army, that lack of pressures. Can you guys think of what I'm thinking? It's not adrenaline. Not adrenaline.
There's less stakes. Tension. Like there's not.
Yeah, there's that lack of stake.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's steak. Probably where the fighters come into that lack of stake.
Yeah. Vegetarianism.
That's a bad problem.
Yeah. Steak or
stakes?
Like steaks. Like there's not. There's. It doesn't. Like we were saying about Thailand.
You're
going to
die if you don't do your job in a bottle shop.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
The world's too safe, but here.
The thing is, the reason I bring it up, I was in Vegas and a friend of ours, they had a cousin who just come back from Afghanistan. And am I not speaking to the mic?
No, you said I was in Vegas, and I was going to say it stays in Vegas, but you'd already got too far into this.
Yeah, I got it. No, yeah.
Yeah, you've worked it out. It's like if you just don't stop talking,
I can't get away. I was in Vegas at the time. And actually,
this
guy came straight out of Afghanistan. And he'd just seen some of his friends get blown up by... I get mixed up with IUDs and the things that prevent pregnancies.
IUDs.
Seriously, I've failed on more than one occasion.
I think one's an intrauterine device, or one's has something explosive device.
Ease the critical letter
in both are on lives.
Yeah.
One saves lives, one takes it.
Yes. Well, anyway, so he'd just come out, and he was working a construction job, and I meet him at 7 a.m. And really nice guy. But it's 7 a.m. He meets us at a petrol station to pick us up. We're going shooting in the desert, which is really exciting for me, fun. And so he's got his piece holstered on the side there. He's got an open carry license. I didn't even know you could get that. It was actually
a piece.
He was strapped, man.
Oh, no, he was packing.
Packing heat.
He was packing. And he's got a big gulp. You know what a big gulp is?
Yeah. Okay. I don't know why, but I do.
Coca-Cola, basically. But with like high fructose corn syrup, but like a bucket.
American sized.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Smoking cigarettes, like that's his oxygen tank. And he's taking us out shooting. And I'm thinking,
America! Yeehaw!
Super nice guy. Super nice guy. No question that he's not a good guy. But I could see he's got hooked on this and he's got hooked on that because of the anxiety stuff. It makes him feel bad when he wakes up in the morning. And while we're out there, he was very nice, showed us how to shoot. We had fun. There's a bunch of mannequins we like blew up and stuff. And he told me a story about a guy who'd pulled up next to him and they went behind them and started shooting, like just slightly back. And he said to the guy, guys, you need to move forward. Otherwise, you know, we're not going to, you're going to hit us. We've got a 4-year-old in the car, blah, blah. And then the guy's like, no, we'll be all right, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, me and my missus, she went and took the shotty out and we had the gun and we were ready to go. And I was like, whoa, this dude is missing an arm. He didn't go to arm. He went to Afghanistan. But I've noticed my dad, who's an ex-army guy, he finds a way to turn things into those situations to feel alive again.
Yeah.
And I guess that's kind of where I was. I don't know. I that's what I wanted to ask you. I imagine somewhere in there that, I guess MMA fighters retiring would probably feel similar, but is that something like that you see?
Yeah. I mean, it's not something I experienced personally. But I could see how it would be
like it is a thing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's guys that I served with in the army who are like mad skydiving.
Yeah.
You know, like they're just kind of chasing that edge again. Yeah.
You what's know, the conflict thing? What's the need? Like, I've got an obvious answer,
guess is it's just that adrenaline kick still, though, because I mean, you know what it's like, even if you just get into an argument, you know, when your hands shake and it's not because it's not because you can't control yourself, it's that biochemical response that we go through, you know, vasoconstriction, all the rest of it, which then also triggers an adrenaline response. So, but it also could just be like in extreme cases with PTSD guys, sometimes it kicks them into, a detachment from reality. Oh, they're that going through something
like a psychotic break
that they've been through. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't think that's as common an explanation, but there's, certainly occurs.
Like, so you go to the army, you're fucking with your team, you feel you rely on everybody, you've got meaning, all this sort of stuff. You come out and then boom, you're working a little worse. And you're
30. Yeah, it's not ideal, right?
What happens? How do you stop? I mean, I don't think I would kill myself, but I can see why people get to that stage.
Well, there's actually there's an alarming percentage of Australians.
I'm joking.
It's interesting for me to be interesting for other people.
Yeah, go for it.
An alarming percentage of homeless Australians are veterans and contemporary veterans. Yeah, we're talking.
But is that because of the contemporary ones?
Yeah, Iraq and Afghanistan. Veterans,
so it wasn't the government drug experiments from the NAM sort of stuff. You're talking about the new ones.
Yeah, there were recent drug experiments but not hallucinogens, but there's certainly some controversial stuff.
In like amphetamine sort of
stuff? Malarial drugs being, untested malarial drugs being. That was happening whilst I was in East Timor. My unit didn't have them, but others did whilst we were there. So that's in recent history, and there's been a lot of side effects and so on. So
one of our coaches, who was a commando, two commando in England, or two commando, not two commando, just commando.
Yeah.
They signed a thing where every week they just try a new drug on them, pharmaceutical testing on the Marines.
Someone's making money off
of that.
That happens,
not the Marines.
Is that true?
I can't speak for those guys. I never saw anything like that happen.
Holy crap.
The Australian Army. But, I mean, you know, they're a risky thing. So when Iraq kicked off in 2003, the big scare was anthrax. So there was an anthrax shot, and that had a serious list of potential side effects, like pretty serious.
Yeah.
To the point that it was a bit of a scary thing for guys. And there were guys that flat out refused to sign for it. So those guys didn't get sent. So those guys lost their spot on a deployment. So, which at the time, like, it sounds crazy now, but at the time, 2003, soldiers were lining up for deployments. If you got a chance to deploy, you would sell your grandmother to go.
I was going to say that was a pretty common place.
Yeah. It sounds like a really, really, really crass thing to say, this analogy, but I think it's the best one out there. There's not really an equivalent, but you imagine that you spend your life learning how to play football, get to a certain level that now you get drafted into, like a professional team, and then you never play.
Yeah, it's a good job.
And I'm not comparing playing to combat, but it's that testing yourself. It's putting skills into practice. Yeah, exactly right. And also that feeling of being there with your teammates and that kind of thing. So, that's a big factor. And at the time, the Australian Army hadn't really been to a lot of places. So, East Timor was in 99 was the biggest deployment we'd had since Vietnam. And that was in 99, September 99 that happened. So, that's the first time we'd sent thousands of troops anywhere. And when I went through recruit training,
sell it to like our granddads.
Oh yeah,
like my granddad and his best mate rode their bikes to the next town in Dorset when they were 17 and lied about how old they were so they could join the army, see the world. And he did. He went to Egypt. He went to Italy. He went all over.
That's true.
He went all over the place. And it was like, some of the stories he used to tell me when he was still alive. Like, he was one of the rats at Tobruk. Like, he had shrapnel still in his arm that they'd never taken out because fuck the doctor, I'm not going to the doctor. It was in his arm. That was it.
So what happens when you come back and you're working at Woolworths? We didn't get to that stage.
Yeah.
What do you do? How do you stop yourself?
Well, I guess, again, it comes down to the individual and what they're...
Well, let me rephrase.
Because they're not all going to respond the same way.
Just in general terms.
Well, this is where the system's broken at the moment. Yeah, it's my understanding through everything that I've read and speaking to other veterans that the DVA system is not.
What's the DVA
system? Department of Veterans Affairs. So, it's too complex. It's mostly being run by people who don't understand what it is that they're doing.
Right.
And, don't have that empathy towards cases. You know, we have a big problem of veterans killing themselves whilst awaiting their cases to be seen by DVA.
When you say cases seen,
have to make a claim. So, like, you know, if you say you come out of the military and start experiencing, it's not just mental health, it's physical health as well, injuries, what have you. You have to go through a claim, and that's investigated like any insurance claim would be. So
harassment.
Yeah. And you, so if you imagine, if you've been through something traumatic and now you're being investigated and having to relive that, and if part of the problem dealing with that is that you are reliving that and it becomes...
And it's not a counsellor, supervised...
Yeah, and there's some paranoia starts coming into it. They don't trust me, they don't believe me, but I'm suffering, I'm going through this thing. So, you know, I'm speaking very generally.
So we can understand
it. So the system's broken. Guys aren't getting help as rapidly as they probably need to. There used to be a culture of guys not seeking their help, but I believe that's a lot better than it used to be if following the veterans groups I'm part of is anything to go by. But I don't think there's an easy answer, to be honest. I think there's always going to be a problem for veterans transitioning from defense to civil service. It's always been a problem, and it will always be a problem. It's just... we could probably reduce the problem by
some people demanding more. Jump on the guys saying that jiu-jitsu helps. And obviously, it's not the actual art of jiu-jitsu. It must be the camaraderie, right?
Well, we run a program at Element where ADF veterans can train for free up until they earn their blue belt. So that's what we've offered them. Because the thing that I have felt on a personal level, and that we've had quite a few veterans come through the club over the years that all reflect the same thing, is that there is... like a MAC culture that's maybe one of the closer things towards the military culture in terms of the just that camaraderie you get with someone when you're trying to trade the shit out of them. That's not a normal thing. Well, so there's a trust. We all trust each other not to do the wrong thing to each other.
You get choked.
And we all have the power to do that. We all have the power to break each other's arms or what have you. And we trust each other not to do that.
So that's not just propaganda bullshit. That actually does have some.
Yeah, I strongly believe so. I really do. I have felt it myself, and the vets that we've had come through have found that as well when I've spoken to them.
That's cool.
I was just going to say, like, in general, like, if you look at. There's like a heap of studies around being part of a tribe, being part of a community, like regardless of anything really. Like I feel like there's a reason that the four of us, Sue, you know,
I'm naked right now.
Well, the camera's on. Like, there's a reason that you can meet the majority of martial artists. Anyone that's done martial arts regardless of the martial art, anyone that's done it for an extended period of time, you generally have got a similar mindset. That has to all.
You catch the same
manifest from the same place somewhere, like deep seated, and it's. Like, I hadn't thought about it, but like a lot of the guys I know have done like something to do with the military, and it's the same. It's like following a system, following a set of rules and beliefs. Like it's obviously just
a lot of people I find don't even necessarily like jiu-jitsu that much. They like the community of the people who do jiu-jitsu. That's sometimes people don't even want to roll; they just want to be
just hang out.
Gym And I think Sydney, you were talking about Sydney, one of the things is why my gym has worked well, besides obviously programs and classes and stuff. Programs and classes and all that sort of stuff. We put a lot of effort in, right? But one of the reasons is that most people in a CBD sort of type of place like Sydney, which is they stay in their house and watch Netflix and on their phone, and their friends look at Instagram or Facebook, but they don't go for beers. It's not like, I guess in London, you go for a beer before you go home. You see
them. They're isolated.
Say it again.
They're isolated.
They're isolated. So jiu-jitsu, a lot of the time, is the only social thing people see between Monday and Friday, besides their own partner and their house. So it's almost like an antidote to – antidote? Yeah, antidote. That's like an anecdote. It's an antidote almost to the increasing isolation that the internet, Netflix, and city living bring. So there's somewhat even related – to the average civilian now, because it's becoming more like that.
Might have to wrap it up there because you're, speaking of which, you're teaching a seminar in 25 minutes.
Especially since I told everyone to be there on time.
Just a warm up.
It isn't the funnest
We didn't get to the Yelp review.
I was looking at the board.
I still haven't read it.
Episode two. We definitely don't have time.
I read that on the board before. I was like, did we do that? And I just forgot.
I'm going to read it to you guys.
We didn't do anything.
Finish with the Yelp review and then we'll turn it off.
So, basically, just to give a quick summary, will you give a summary quickly for 2 seconds on why I'm doing this?
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Funnier than if I do it.
The summary is Liam's obsessing over a Yelp review from 5 years ago, and as we were speaking about it today, there was a reply.
There was a reply from 5 years
ago. Right at that moment.
It's like when Kramer gets the call that he's going back to work. You know, he's just been in work for 30 years.
No, your side, you get back to it.
You've got a 2-minute timer.
So Skippy, after I write two pages, and she's anonymous.
5 years later.
This isn't that exciting.
Oh.
Basically, I wrote this whole thing about how this guy had his own demons, but he's well-intended, blah, blah. He was not well-intended. I replied to your message on your business account. Once you read that, you'll understand why I won't try again. No, I don't.
Anti-climax. End of podcast.
All right, boring. I was expecting something more psychologically damaged than that.
Let's just hope she has a good time doing whatever she does.
She has five one-star reviews.
I hope her life gets better.
We wish you the best.
And I offered her to come train martial arts, and it would have made it better.
Just know
maybe one day she will.
Instead, she stopped eating cinnamon scrolls.
Too inconsistent after tea.
It's probably my life. It's passive aggressive way of getting back at me. Besides, paper cuts when I sleep.
Racist.
Awkward.